News Service Daily Newscast for October the 21st, 2020. I'm Mike Clifford. And as we head into the final stretch towards the election, Michigan's shift from blue to red in the 2016 race could be an outlier. That's according to some new research.
The States of Change report examines the ways generational changes could shape the next five presidential elections, from an aging-eligible voter population to a more diverse and better-educated electorate. Report co-author William Frey with the Brookings Institution says the findings suggest 11 swing states that voted Republican in 2016 could shift to Democratic by 2036, with Michigan going blue as early as the 2020 election.
If things stayed the same as they are now, it would be difficult for the Republicans to take over, but I think both parties are interested in getting as many voters as they can and will pay attention to this underlying demographic structure. Demography does not determine destiny, but it certainly shapes it in a big way.
Frey notes a growing movement toward Republicans among white non-college voters could potentially counter demographic changes. Between now and 2036, millennial and Gen Z voters are expected to increase from 36% of Michigan's electorate to 59%, while boomer voters and older will drop from 40% to 20%. Mary Sherman reporting.
The report notes that those findings are simulations about how the electorate might evolve and are not predictions about the outcomes of the elections. The U.S. Supreme Court ruling means that mail-in ballots postmarked by Election Day will still be counted, even if they arrive up to 3 days after the polls close in Pennsylvania. Vic Voltrick is with the ACLU of Pennsylvania and says that extra time is warranted by the huge increase in mail-in votes this election.
It's a victory for voting rights. It's a victory for common sense. And it's tragic that there are people in this country who would oppose this kind of practical solution.
And people living with disabilities have often faced physical obstacles to casting their votes, but their advocates say voting by mail can present a whole different set of challenges.
In every election, people with disabilities have encountered polling places that lack wheelchair ramps or other accommodations. But now, with the COVID pandemic making in-person voting riskier for those with underlying health conditions, Monica Bartley with the Center for Independence of the Disabled New York points out that people who are blind or have problems with dexterity can't fill out a standard mail-in ballot.
We had a lawsuit just before the primary election, and that enabled us to get an accessible absentee ballot.
Applications for the online accessible ballots can be found at elections.ny.gov. The application must be received at least 7 days before the election. I'm Andrea Sears reporting.
This is PNS. Older voters may not be the only ones curious about how the major presidential candidates see the priorities of people over the age of 50. AARP posed the same set of questions to President Donald Trump and Democratic nominee Joe Biden.
Both candidates share their views on Social Security, Medicare, prescription drugs, COVID-19, nursing homes, and race relations, among others. Senior Vice President of Campaigns at AARP, John Hishta, notes in the last presidential contest, candidate Trump led in the 65-plus age group by close to 10%. But recent polls show Biden with a narrow lead among older voters.
I do think it's a direct result of their nervousness around the COVID pandemic, as well as their own health and things like that.
AARP has posted the candidates' interviews on its website, along with video voter guides for each state. In New Hampshire, candidates for governor and the Senate and congressional races answer questions through recorded video responses. I'm Laura Ross-Brautelum reporting.
This election, Colorado's voters will decide whether to direct the state's Parks and Wildlife Commission to bring gray wolves back to their historical habitat.
John Murtaugh with Defenders of Wildlife says Proposition 114 would create space to craft a reintroduction plan based on the best available science, bringing ranchers, hunters, farmers, and conservation groups to the table.
It's very light on specifics, and that's because we recognize that those decisions need to be made through that communicative process. And that means bringing all the different stakeholders together.
Opponents of reintroduction argue that wildlife management decisions should be left to state experts, noting the commission has declined to bring wolves back 4 times. Ranching and hunting associations also believe the move would lead to loss of livestock and big game. I'm Eric Galatis.
Between 66 and 84% of Coloradans surveyed over the past 2 decades support reintroducing the wolves. And finally, the federal government has approved new protections for fragile coral hotspots in the Gulf of Mexico. Our Tramal Gomes explains it's a long-awaited victory for environmental groups.
Now damaging fishing gear like trawls, traps, anchors, and long lines can't be used in nearly 500 miles of scattered reef and canyon sites from Florida to Texas. Holly Binns with the Pew Charitable Trust's Marine Life Program says the added protections will protect ecosystems that provide food, shelter, and breeding grounds for sea life sought after by recreational and commercial fishers.
These rich and abundant coral communities on the deep ocean floor where there is no light, but they're incredibly important habitat for a whole variety of marine wildlife, and that's important to support.
Support for this reporting provided by the Pew Charitable Trusts. And this is Mike Clifford for Public News Service, member and listener supported, heard on some of the nation's most interesting radio stations, and online at publicnewsservice.org.